Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the great stuff that you're doing for the community, that's for sure. Hey, this program is sponsored in part by the Kentucky and Pennsylvania AFL-CIOs, and we appreciate their support very much. Joining me today, I got to tell you, folks, this is going to be very interesting. It has a direct impact on your safety and the safety of your family. We're talking with Stuart Garner. He is with Smart. Stuart, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Charles. It's great to be with you, and thank you for the opportunity once again.
Stu, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate it. Do me a favor. Stu, explain to the listening audience what Smart is.
Well, Smart is was a merger between the Sheet Metal Workers and the United Transportation Union. It officially took place back in 2014 in August. It is, if you break it down, it's Sheet Metal Air Rail Transportation Union, and we're the transportation division part of SMART.
Mm-hmm. And you yourself are a railway professional, right?
Well, I hope to think so.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah,
I have 38 years with Norfolk Southern. I had 18 years as a brakeman and conductor, and then I transferred to engine service, so I was a locomotive engineer for 20 years up until the time I was elected to the position I hold now with the union.
And folks, you got to understand something about being the engineer. If anything goes wrong, it's the engineer's fault, and they don't even get to blow the whistle. But that's another story. So, Stu, I'm pulling your leg a little bit, but, you know, you've got a lot of experience. And when we're talking about heavy-duty equipment, like locomotives and a train that's a mile, 2 miles long, carrying some of the nastiest stuff that you could ever imagine, you know, hey, Balkan oil. I mean, you know, these trains are going right through downtown Pittsburgh and elsewhere. Okay.
So, oh, yeah, and they're going right through downtown Columbus as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they go right underneath the convention center in downtown Columbus.
So what you guys have, you know, not just at railway crossings and the like, but you guys have a very serious job in totality, the whole team. And one of the things that's going on, which is just, for me, unfathomable, is some of the health and safety things that the companies want to take away and are probably getting some support from the current administration on.
Well, that's absolutely right. You have to go back a little ways in history. Back to 2008 is when there was a terrible train accident out in California. And if the operator, which I believe is a one-person operator at the time, was texting, and he slams into this train that was ahead of him and killed umpteen number of people,
right,
injured so many more. And that prompted the federal government, Congress, to mandate, an unfunded mandate for all these railroads, to install a safety layer called positive train control. But the problem is the carriers feel that they've been mandated. They were supposed to have this implemented back in 2015, and the December 31st never happened. They had an extension. They have an extension now to the end of 2018, and in some cases they can ask for an extension there. Through the Federal Railroad Administration. So they feel as if this positive train control, because it was unfunded by the government, that it's going to be a panacea for them to go about getting rid of one of the other people on the crew. You know, we have two people on a freight train throughout the country.
Right.
And that's their methodology or theory about why they can just go ahead and get rid of the conductor.
Stu, you know, this sounds to me like they're trying to do away with some of those burdensome governmental regulations to keep us all safe. You know.
Oh yeah, there's a big onslaught going on with that currently.
Yeah, and the darndest thing about this is you need two people on the aircraft or you know on the train, just like we need two people on the flight deck on an aircraft.
Absolutely.
For a reason.
You hit the nail on the head. I mean, that's the correlation that we bring to the table is that, you know, this is just as, you know, dangerous as, you know, flying a passenger airplane. And we take this very seriously, that we have this backup, two people on a crew. You know, when I started out, we had five people on a crew. And through attrition and through labor contracts, we got down to the two-person crew, which is pretty much a standard operation in all the major Class 1 railroads in the country.
Stu, let me ask you this. I don't want to belittle this, but, I mean, my God, when you're operating a train, a locomotive, several locomotives, and a mile worth of Lord only knows what, to include shale oil, I mean, you have to do things like go to the bathroom, grab your lunch, so on and so forth. Humanity happens. If you have somebody to back you up, they can watch while you go do what you need to do. But if you don't have that, what, do people magically not go to the bathroom anymore?
Well, you're not really supposed to say I was the engineer and I needed to use the facilities. You know, technically, we would bring the train to a safe stop, you know, off crossings if at all possible, quickly do our thing, and then get back up and notify the dispatcher that we're ready to go again. But the reality is that, yes, we do use that other conductor to switch places or just to kind of watch and maintain while you quickly try to, you know, take care of things.
So let me ask you this. What would happen to one of your people as a union representative if they said, oh, gee, I've got to go to the bathroom. I got to stop the train. I stopped the train. Yes, the company's losing money, but that's okay. We're doing it safely. We're doing it the right way. What would happen to that engineer?
Well, he'd probably be brought up on charges of delaying the train.
Well, there you go.
And that's it. You know, you talk about you're being generous by saying 100 car length trains now, which, you know, by the old methodology, it equals to about a mile length of train. But now the reality is these carriers such as CSX, Norfolk Southern, and the rest of the Class 1s want to run these trains that are 2 miles and 2.5 miles in length. And it's a real, you know,
How long does it take a 2.5 mile long train to stop?
Well, it all depends on your weight, number of cars you have, and the place where you're at. But if you go in emergency, it could take you up to a mile to get stopped, a mile or three-quarters of a mile to get stopped, that kind of train. Depends on the weight, you know, tonnage also.
So if you – you know, Stu, I am thinking about this. They not only are they being penny – wise and pound foolish, but when it comes to train crossings or coming in on a curve too fast, or you know that train up ahead, you know something's wrong and it's stopped on your tracks, or something else. If you know, two sets of eyes are better than one set. Two people to deal with an emergency is better than one. And you can't tell me the cost of that second person there is prohibitive when you're moving a mile, 2 miles, 2.5 miles worth of train.
You're absolutely right. I mean, we try to, when we go and talk to members of Congress and state legislators, I always bring up the fact that this positive train control is just another layer of safety.
Right.
It has a lot of great features in it, but it doesn't have the feature where if you go in an emergency, meaning there's a separation of an air hose, or maybe the train goes on the ground, derails. You know, you have that conductor up there. He is actually the first responder, if you will, and a troubleshooter. He gets off the train after you're stopped. We notify the dispatcher that we went in an emergency at where our location is, and he starts walking back to try and find what the problem is. And if you're actually handling hazmat material like chlorine and vinyl chloride and the fracked oil, if there's a problem, you're on the ground, he can see it from a little ways away, and he has a consist to tell him exactly where this hazmat material is and what is in them. And so he would contact the dispatcher. They would contact the fire department or whoever. They'll come out, and our conductor will give that first responders to the scene what is actually in those cars if there's a problem.
Absolutely. Stu, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Hopefully we've educated people about what the problem is. I know you have some solutions on your website. How do we find it?
Well, our website is it's very easy to get to. It's www.smart-.com or /oslb@gmail.com.
Okay. And what we're going to do is we're going to put a link up and make sure that people get that. But in the meantime, Stu, I want to make sure that we get you back to talk about this some more because this is very important. This is the health and safety of the community. And, for a couple of bucks, we've got people saying we don't need that second pair of eyes on the train. And that's silly to me. We appreciate your time.
It certainly is because these carriers today, 98% of them already have two people on a crew, and they're paying those costs. And, just putting and getting rid of somebody just to make up the money that you're going to lose with positive train control, I mean, that doesn't make any sense from a safety standpoint for our members and for the public in general that our trains pass through their communities.
That's why we have airbags and seat belts in our cars. Multiple layers of protection. Just saying. Stu, we got to get going. We appreciate you being with us, and we'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Stu, for the opportunity, Charles. We'll talk to you. Bye.
It was Stu Gardner of SMART. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio.